I think we're about it. I will usually wait until about 10 after, and then we'll get started. Anybody got anything they want? Any reports they want? Anything they want to share? Particular.
No Promethea visitations this week.
I did have very intense dreams, not about Promethea. She is still hiding from me, and by libido, I guess. But I did have strong dreams about using a version of Johanna's. What's the name of your?
The elemental power spread.
Yeah, the elemental power spread. At least in its four version, if not the five or six. You have what five and six, right? Six part spread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The full basic version is six cards.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was thinking when we get to the point where we're going to consult the Oracle. By the way, if any questions arise that seem to be relevant to that you want to consult the Oracle about, just raise them. Raise them when you think of them. It doesn't matter where we are in the story or whether we finish the story or not. And that way we'll keep them in mind when we come around to consulting the Oracle. And we'll try to do that after we've discussed a little bit about the background of the text. So I'm stalled long enough. We who are here are here, so we're going to have to double up on...
I need to go get my top deck. I left it in the other room. I'll be right back.
Okay. Let's see. I will play... Who wants to be Stace, Sophie Promethea?
I can be it because I'm a little Red Riding Hood.
That's right, she's Red Riding Hood, so somebody else.
Come on, Maribeth. Come on.
What?
Be
what?
Promethea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to be Promethea. Yeah, I'll be Promethea.
And then somebody also needs to be Stacia. That's a relatively brief role. I mean, it's not...
Okay, I'll be Stacia. I just don't want to... I know I'm going to be sneezing and dripping.
That's okay.
I don't want to be going...
We got some... I'll be the five swell guys.
Okay.
All five of them.
And I will play a couple of the smaller roles, such as the panhandler, the gorilla... I want the big bad wolf.
Oh, well, that's it.
Does somebody else want to be the big bad wolf? And we got Barbara. Barbara, again, is a pretty limited role. She's only in it for a little bit.
I could be Barbara.
Be. Huh?
Oh, Val. Val, you want to be Barbara?
Val, why don't you be Barbara, Val? Would you be...
I could do Barbara.
Okay, because it's brief and it's up here sort of the front. Okay, here we go. Promethea in Mystic Magic Land. Off Tower Hospital, New York, 1999 AD. Doctor, how is he? How's Marv? I'm sorry, it's still too early to say. Your friend took three of the painted doll's hollow points in his chest and he's crinkled.
This is your fault, Kenneth. You should have predicted what the doll would do.
Roger, leave it.
Get out of this, Bob. You're the leader. I'm the muscle, Stan's the mechanic, Mars the genius, and Kenneth is supposed to be our psychic.
Ken, buddy. I gotta say, maybe Roger's right. Maybe you're losing. No, I'm sensing stuff right now. Something's coming. Promethea! Oh, I don't know. Who the hell?
Who the hell is that?
She looks like some kind of science heroine. Maybe she's from out of town. Did we meet somewhere already?
I doubt it. Please excuse me, but I'm here to visit a sick friend.
Well, really? Excuse me, miss, you're looking for, What the hell? Listen, better back off. I got orders. This patient gets no visitors. Oh, Harry, it's all right. I was here when this lady brought her in, the patient earlier. Just lets her through, okay?
Are you all right? Can you talk?
Barbara.
Yeah, I'm okay. They're fixing me up with that clone meat stuff. But, you know, it's funny seeing you being Promethea instead of me.
I'm not finding it very funny. I don't know how to revert to Sophie, and these two things, the Galicia attacked me, and now my friend Stacy has gone, and...
Whoa, did you say Gosia?
Yes, their names were Andrus and Marcosius. They said that Gosia meant howling.
Dear God, someone must be real pissed about you, girl. How'd you banish them? Let me guess, you used the pentagram, right?
The five-pointed star? Yes, I just seemed to know what was needed.
Promethea knew. You'll find her with Sophia's personality flickering back and forth at first. Just try not to go nuts, okay?
Yes, but how do I stop being Promethea? And what about Sophie's friend Stacia? She just got sucked into nowhere.
Wait a minute, what's this? You're saying some civilian got involved? Where'd this fight happen?
At a rock concert. The demons opened this gateway to escape through. Stacia, Sophie's friend, was sucked through after.
Oh, geez, listen, this is very bad. Your friend, Sophie's friend, is in the immateria.
She's, yeah, that's still you, Barbara.
She's the mystic magic land.
Weeping gorilla? I can't breathe. They fired me.
But that's where where Promethea comes from. How do I get back there? Do I open a gateway like those demons did?
No, that's physical magic. It's always sort of brutal and unnecessary. You ought to be able to do it in your mind. But that's how you get back to being Sophie, too. Writing stuff down makes it more focused, but the imagination's the most important thing.
So what, I just imagine this immateria place and it springs up around me?
Sure, imagination is part of the immateria. It's just the part closest to the physical world. All us vessels of Promethea have had different ways of getting there. Margaret Case, UCL, Misty Magic Land, arise! Grace Branagh had a painting of the lost land of High Brazil that she sort of put herself into.
So if I were to kind of imagine, say, these columns growing up through the floor, just as an example...
The lakes and stars on top? Yeah, you're getting it. Now, the trick is you got to believe in the columns more than you believe in this hospital. Imagine them more solid and this world more ghostly.
Barbara, you're fading away.
Good, you are too. That's supposed to happen. See, at Promethea, you're made of imagination. That's why you can make this journey boldly. You're where you think you are. Now, Sophie, she's flesh and blood. She could only visit the materia in her...
But I don't know anything about this place. I need you to explain it to me. Can't you stay with me, Barbara?
Sorry, kiddo. Oh, gosh, I can't read this.
Me either. She's fading away.
Oh, no.
Barbara? Where am I? Oh, my soul. Oh, God, I know this place. We know this place.
Mystic Magic Land.
It's like a recurring dream that Sophie had when she was like 9 or something. Or maybe she just dreamed she had that dream. Or she dreamed it once, but in the dream she remembered dreaming it before. Or...
Now it's time for the little red.
Hey, hey you. Stay focused, you stupid bitch. You're losing it. And if you lose it here, well, then you've really lost it. Hell, you could even go crazy. Now, what I'm saying...
Oh, God, are you... I mean, you're...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get over it, okay? You're in Mystic Magic Land now, and you gotta hang on to your clarity. You were losing it back there.
But I mean, you're exactly the way I imagined you.
Well, duh. Listen, here, looking for something, right? So, do you want me to help you, or do you want to stay around here all day?
I suppose I'm here looking for a friend of mine. She got sucked into this place by accident.
Uh-huh. So it's like this perilous quest thing, right? When you'll be wanting the dark woods right over there, I'm going that way myself.
But how do you know that's where she'll be lost?
Oh, come on. Where else do kids get lost in stories? Did you ever hear of anything titled Babes in the Supermarket? She's in the dark woods, trust me.
Well, couldn't she be in some other dark woods?
There's only one dark woods. I mean, I ought to know. 500 years taking this friggin' basket to my friggin' grandmother. Plus, they're a lot further away than they look. You notice that?
Yes. Yes, I see what you mean. They're bigger, too. What I don't understand is why you should be the one to meet me.
Because you were thinking about me, dummy. You even sort of mentioned me.
But I haven't thought of you or mentioned you in... Oh, wait. Yes, I did. I told Stacy I was stuck in a fairyland and wanted to get out.
Before the part with the wolf. Yeah, well... So much for that, huh?
Hey, Paul, you know how to make an entrance. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God, look at... I'm frightened. Why am I so frightened?
Because you're facing the unvarnished idea without any adult defenses like distance or irony or whatever. You're seeing it like a child sees it. Plus, it's a friggin'... expletive deleted, big wolf. What's not to be frightened of?
Little pigs, me come in.
Not by the... Should I say it? Fucking hair on your chinny.
Sure.
Fucking
you go
chin. You
I think we're adults. Yeah. We can face the unvarnished truth, yes. The unvarnished truth.
When do I get hold of Rachel? Wolf. Oh, ho.
Oh, well, you're
you
on.
Didn't finish it, did you?
Oh, no.
Not by the frigging fracking?
Oh, yeah, not by the fucking hair on your chinny fucking chin chin, you fucker.
Oh, ho. Then, huff.
Fuck! Where's the safety on this fucking thing?
You've got a gun, but that's...
Where did I come from?
Poppy drew a doodle of you. Just after this movie, Reservoir Dogs came out.
Yeah.
It had you holding a gun and this caption saying, "Let's go to Grandma's."
You've got a gun, but that's... Oh, okay. Okay, that's...
And a puff!
But, I mean, the doodle wasn't really that... funny, so Sophie threw it away.
She threw a piece of paper away. Maybe ideas ain't that easy to get rid of. Oh, you instantly draw guns like a girl, goddamn piece of...
And I'll blow your house in. Ah!
Ah! Dog breath!
After all that, wow. With dog breath?
Wow, fuck!
Oh, God, is he coming after us?
Nah, he knows the rules. He'll wait for me at Grandma's. I better go haul the old bat out of the dial. I'm sorry. I better go haul the old bat out of his digestive tract and you go find your friend. She'll be somewhere nearby. These woods go on forever, but actually, they ain't that big. Listen, this gun is crap. I gotta find a kindly woodsman with an axe. You take care now.
I will. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, no, that's not me. That's Stacia. Sorry.
Oh, God. I wish I was dead.
Stacia?
It's so sad. It's just so sad.
She gets the kids and the house. I get the car.
Oh, God, we're all so unhappy. I understand that now. People are in so much pain. I never do. I never do.
Stacia? Stacia? It's me, Sophie. Stacia, that person you're talking to, it's Weeping Gorilla.
I know, and I understand what he means now. He isn't funny. He isn't funny at all. He's us, and he can't stop crying.
I guess people change.
Stacia, listen, he's an idea. It's just that you're experiencing it naked, at full strength, without any emotional filters. He's a symbol.
Yes, he's a symbol of humanity. That's all we are, don't you see? We're the gorilla that weeps.
Everyone said I should get Windows 95.
Stacia, he's just a commercial icon who spouts self-pitying catchphrases. Oh, God, that poor monkey.
Why do pets have to die? I like country music. It tells the truth.
You're right, Stacia, you're right. All those generations of people crushed by this terrible sadness.
What's the point? What's the point of anything?
Some days are better than others.
I wanted to get you out of here, but I failed. Everything failed. We're all so useless.
I just want to sit here until I die.
What do you mean you need more space?
No, I have to get up. I know it's pointless, but...
No, don't leave me. Everybody I ever loved me. They all love me, those bastards.
The garage thinks it's the crutch.
I have to believe there's hope. I have to believe there's happiness.
I hate my body. Can we hear that Radiohead track just once more?
Smack! You feel that, Paul? Come on, Stacia. Let's get out of his range before he overwhelms us again. God, my eyes, they feel raw in my throat. I just couldn't stop crying.
If I only understood what women wanted. I'm sorry, I'm not hearing.
This is a place where fictions and symbols are all that's real. Their intensity is undiluted.
Yeah, that's Perkuskushia talking again, right? A minute ago, you sounded like Sophie.
Promethea. Sophie Bangs is my newest vessel. Our psyches will align and synchronize. Give it a little time.
Hey, don't worry about it. Multiple personalities are real big right now. What with the mirror being like, 40 different guys. So you're going to click your heels and get us out of here?
I fear that it is not so simple. What Sophie must do, what I got to do, is imagine my way back to New York. This is all so weird. When I get home, I need to find out all about Promethea and what she is. You'll help me do the research, huh, Stacia? Stacia?
Grandma wasn't home.
Leave her alone. You're not even a real wolf. You're just a big, scary blob of stuff to frighten kids with. Stacia, I'm serious. The story about the wolf probably goes back to the Stone Age. I think he's older and stronger than Promethea. We have to concentrate on New York. We have to. Just shut your eyes and think about New York. Think about the noise and the smell.
There's no place like home. Like home. There's no place like home. It's not happening. All I can hear is that wolf thing panting behind us.
Try to turn it into the growl of traffic or something. Come on, Stacia, help me out here.
Okay, maybe. It's working.
Oh, the better to stop your hearts, my dears.
Stacia, get up. We have to get back to our reality right away.
Oh, geez, can't you hail a cab or something? Concentrate. While feeling in terror?
Good, just a little bit farther. Try and make the scent of all these flowers and blossoms smell like pizza and exhaust.
Spare change?
Oh gosh, everything's flowing like water. It's like this rushing current. Did I just say gosh?
Don't let go. We're right on the shoreline of reality here, and the undertow is terrific.
Pro-life-a, I'm slipping.
Just hold tight. We're almost home.
We're back. You can slow down now.
No, I'm not completely back. Sophie's not back. I have to find somewhere away from everybody to imagine myself back into her.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. You completely rule and have boobs and tattoos and stuff. You want to be this desperate college geek.
I'm not desperate. Stacia, shut up and help me think about Sophie.
Well, she's about 5'6 or something. She lives with her mom, who is a total nympho called Trish. I think Sophie maybe got laid about 4 times if you count that thing she dated in high school.
Ronald, God, I remember.
She pretends she's heard of black metal bands and press guys. She has a huge disfiguring mole on her butt. She's gay.
I am not gay. God, is my mole really that big?
Yeah, it's immense. Luckily, mostly, it just looks like you're wearing giant velvet underpants. Jeez, you gotta tell me that diet. You're evaporating. That's supposed to happen, right? I mean, you're okay. Propania?
Promethea.
Okay.
So.
Very good. I could see why you had the elemental power dream, especially before this chapter. Because the misty magic land is filled with elementals.
Yes. So that's our topic for discussion today, folks. You noticed there was a bunch of cards floating around.
Yeah,
I did notice
cards
that.
Cards without commentary.
Alice in Wonderland or something, you know.
Yes.
Or through the looking glass, yeah.
But it also a sort of foreshadowing of the cards to be the tarot that we will eventually experiencing.
Yes, way more black cards than red cards.
Ooh, good observation.
And also, there was a major... Let's see. I have to get the book out again here. I have this huge, absolute version of Promethea, and it's very shiny when I have the light over it. So sometimes I can't even read the words because of the glare. It's not like...
I get stuck reading top to bottom without reading white page. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very hard to keep... I think that the layout is totally different compared to what you have if you have the comic itself.
Yep.
And, okay, here we go. Mystic Magic Land. If you look at... Well, we have a lot of flowers, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then... I noticed, when she's talking with the gorilla, you have the sylph right in the center. I mean, in the absolute version of it. Mm-hmm. And happy face. Oh, that weeping gorilla, what a great character for humanity. I love it. I love the weeping gorilla.
Apparently.
Reminds me of my husband. He's a weeping gorilla. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, woe is me. There is a link, which is a live link to weeping gorillas on the PDF page. It's called the Weeping Gorilla Quotes page, and it's a compendium of all of his quotations.
I have a question. I am not deeply familiar with your elemental array, Fred. So can you explain that a little bit?
Okay. Go ahead, Paul.
Or are we going to get to that?
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about it. You can look it up, and there's also a PDF that goes with it. And
okay.
The link is in the message I sent you. There were two interim... actually, I think there were three or four interim classes we had after we finished meditations on the Tarot. And one of them is Johanna doing this, doing her elemental array.
Okay, Johanna, when you said that Misty Magic Land is filled with elementals, can you clarify that exactly? What do you mean by that?
Well, fire, water, air, and earth.
Oh, okay. So basically, just the elements. Then.
No,
okay.
Personages. Gnomes, sylphs.
Flowers are personification of earth.
Yeah. The undines are water.
Yeah. Water.
Gnomes are earth. Sylphs are air. And salamanders are fire. And what happens is that they are the. They take orders from in ceremonial magic. They take orders from the archangels.
Okay.
They're sort of the go-to people.
Right.
And it's not the archangels say, okay, if you like you're doing a ritual to Venus, right, to bring more love into your life or more harmony, whatever. It's the archangels take the request. And then they filter it down to the elementals, to bring it about.
Now, does each of the four archangels correspond with only one of the elements, or can all four of them work together in sync?
Oh, no, each archangel does correspond.
Yeah, like Uriel, I'm assuming, would be Earth. And, Gabriel is...
Right. Well, you know, what is so funny is that when I first met Walden Ruth Ann, I took some classes with them. And there was a young lady there who was really a very attractive, beautiful, artistic, operatic singer and musician. And she was going on and she's saying, I want to get married. I want to have a family. Her father just died. She was daddy's girl and she wanted a male figure in her life no matter what. And I said, where is your altar? Because she was a practitioner of magic. And she says, in the north, which is many Wiccan altars. I said, why north? Why north? I mean, what do you want from your life? So she changed. I said, if you want a new beginning, east.
Yeah.
So she changed her altar, and what was so unusual is a young man came to the tarot school where she was attending, and within a year they were married.
Wow. So she invited that new beginning into her life. And one would presume that he was also seeking a new beginning.
Yes.
So they came together. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Just by changing her magical direction.
Yeah.
I didn't tell her to change anything else.
Yeah. I think that the other thing I would want to emphasize specifically is the role of the imagination.
Oh, yes.
That... There was a series of books published at the beginning of the last century, the beginning of the 20th century, by a guy named Douglas Fawcett. The Zermatt Dialogues and the something else Dialogues. But they were published those were published just before World War II, which I think was his last gasp as a philosopher. But he was among his strange career is as a undergraduate at Oxford or Cambridge, he worked on editing Madame Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine. And he also spent a year in India at the compound of the Theosophical Society, which would have been in the early 1890s,
if I remember right. Now, Douglas Fawcett wrote a book called Imagination is Reality. He also wrote several other books in which he brings out a very strong and archetypal idea that's a hermetic idea, you know, par excellence, which is that magic is, you know, practical imagination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, you do have to know at one level how you quicken the imagination. You know, there's imagination that's just that. There's the whimsies of your mind. And then there's ways of accessing the deeper archetypal realms of imagination. And then there are ways of accessing the power of deeper to manifest things. And imagination is very, very effective on many levels. Salesmanship is a form of manipulative imagination. All sorts. We're always manipulating everybody to do things they don't want to do. It's used a lot. It's not usually recognized exactly for what it is. You know, most people who have relatively successful tarot readings are cooperating in their imaginations when they're listening to a tarot reading. If you get the, staunch skeptical scientist who refuses to imaginatively engage in what the cards are showing and access that aspect of themselves, then they'll have a flat reading, and, you know, there's nothing you can do about it because they're not cooperating with their...
Because they're flat. Yeah.
No, actually, it's not. It's just that they themselves think that the imagination has to be more disciplined. They have a sense of discipline. It's sort of like being really uptight.
Yeah.
I said, part of it. I said, at the same time, when people are imaginatively engaged and working with you in a tarot reading, I tell them, you know, that they're making as much magic about what the significance of the thing is as am I, in terms of the reading I'm doing. In other words, they're doing sometimes a lot more of the work than I am, because they're bringing it together.
I mean, even these calls that we're on, because we are not in the same room having a conversation, I think we roll into the realm of imagination to make a connection.
Oh yeah,
I am.
Yeah.
The whole online.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah. You imagine in a way. You have to imagine emotional response.
Yeah,
because you aren't in actual connection with people who you're communicating with, totally written or even via these conference lines.
Well, that way we're actually given something, because we are. One of the things that we're engaged with is our senses, and our senses are like little dictators.
Yeah.
Our habits of our sensations, the way we sense things, the way we see things, the habits of our senses sometimes blur or override the imagination. And of course, with the being that we can't actually see each other, and we're using the secondary but strong sense of hearing as a way of connecting with each other. This liberates that imaginative sense. It probably does create a sense of magical dream space.
Well, I mean, how many times have you imagined what someone looks on, like? I mean,
yeah, right.
I
always imagine people inside out, so that by the time I see them, they're as beautiful as I imagine them.
Reality. Well, you know, Sherry and Val, of course, already know this, but I'll share it with Paul and Johanna.
Sherry and Val and I are all part of a group, an online group called Tarot for Life. And, of course, Paul, you are too. But, what was it, 3 years ago? Yeah, that we all, a whole bunch of us, decided to go to the Reader Studio. And it was the first time most of us had actually seen each other in the flesh. And I was a little apprehensive of that because, you know, I felt I knew these people from my online contact with them. And I was afraid, really, that the reality was going to be a little bit of a letdown. As it turned out, it wasn't. It was even better, you know. But still, I was afraid that my imagination was going to get overrun by the reality of the thing.
Yeah, but there was probably for a little while, at least within the first hour or so, when you were hearing these voices and putting them together with, you know, whatever that indistinct imagerial view that you had in person, and then you're looking at this form, you know, that you hadn't thought of before.
Yeah.
That it might have, there might have been a sense of incongruity.
But you know, I didn't feel that. I don't know if other people did. I did not feel that.
No, me either.
12 or 13 of us there. I mean, there was a large group of us there. This was at Reader Studio 08. But anyway, it was just, it was a cool thing. It was one case where imagination, where reality actually, I won't say was better than imagination, but it didn't, you know, it didn't interfere.
Yeah, it was rather amazing.
Yeah, it was, I mean, very special.
It's like everything just,
yeah,
went right together. I mean, I think it, you know, I'm not sure if that would be the case always, but
yeah.
There's a very interesting illustration here with the playing cards. If you noticed, on the left-hand side is the Two of Hearts. Go diagonally across and to the butterflies, and you'll see that there is a Two of Hearts, but it's a three.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
It changes. It just shows that there is no, that even number reality does not work in mystic magic land. That things are flux or in are flexible.
Yeah, and well, it was like that that guy that was on Donna Lee's show the other day. That had read what's her name, Faith Gervain's number in triangle or whatever it's called. Her I've got the master numbers in front of me, but that wasn't the one she did. She did another one earlier.
Faith who? I'm sorry.
Faith Gervain. She's a numerologist. She's a very interesting numerologist. She's sort of old school, you know, theosophist, sort of Faith Gervain, J-A-V-A-N-E. She's got two books out. One's called The Master Numbers, and the first one, whose title I'm looking at, is something on the Pythagorean magic triangle or something like that. It's not referenced in her second book, which is the one I'm looking at, but they're both really classics in numerology. They're definitely worth reading. So this guy read Faith Gervain's thing, and immediately he was also fasting. So between fasting and reading this numerology, you get
numerology and the divine triangle. It's called.
That's right. That's it. Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks. We get to get our references straight. Thanks. I'm glad somebody's quick on the internet.
She is good. Sherry's always good at finding stuff for us.
Yeah. So, the thing here is that the reason I'm emphasizing this, for me, numbers are one of them are one of the great archetypes. In other words, they seem to be abstract. But the way the imagination understands numbers is very concrete, and almost poetically. So, you know, two means two, but it could also be two like more, and it could be, you know, two as the connective two. That we, these are grammatical archetypes in English for two, and actually it makes sense grammatical archetypes of number sounds in other languages, if you know French and Spanish in terms of the language and stuff, because it's a lot of those things have the deep resonances in terms of how we understand the numbers symbolically, how they're concrete. And that was the thing about, you know, Little Red Riding Hood is, you know, Little Red Riding Hood in this particular case is understood as a, you know, hoodlum.
A girl who knows the territory.
Yeah, she knows the territory.
A girl who is a hood. I like that.
By the way, speaking of understanding the secret, the aspects of the imagination in a literary way, there's a fascinating book by a woman who's only written a couple of books called Victoria Nelson, and she wrote a book called The Secret Life of Puppets.
Oh, now that sounds scary.
Yeah, The Secret Life of Puppets. It was published by Harvard, which don't let that throw you off. It's actually extremely well written. And what it is it's showing how, with as we have lost religion, consensual religion in our society, we are losing it to a degree, no matter how the death throes of religion will be with us for generations. But essentially, nobody would be a Christian if they weren't publishing so many books about Christianity, trying to get people to believe the story. And I hope I'm not insulting anybody's religion right now, because I'm actually, that's what I spent my entire life doing, is studying other people's religions.
Well, the funny thing is, I believe, right, but I don't believe it's the only story. So, you know,
But it's an important story.
Exactly.
The thing here is, so The Secret Life of Puppets shows how this is working in a really deep way, which definitely deals in a sympathetic way with this life of the imagination. You know, artists using imagination and creativity, people who write novels. I interview authors all the time. I have a radio show that I interview new authors on all the time. And we're always talking about the multiple personalities that develop when writing novels and so forth, and characters taking over parts of
stories. Oh, they do. I write fiction myself. I haven't published any, but yes, indeed, the characters absolutely. But they do things that surprise me.
Yeah, exactly. And you're saying something else, which is extremely important for understanding the imagination. Is the imagination is a area or organ of knowledge. It is its own realm of valid knowing. And this is the connection to psychism, right? Activate the imagination, and psychic intuition is, as it were, holding up the whole edifice.
Yeah.
You know? And you think you're just having an imaginative flight of fancy, and you're talking about, you know, Aunt Millie's, you're talking about somebody's long-lost godmother or something.
You know, how would you say, I mean, I have my own ideas, but I'd be interested in hearing other people's opinions of this, that imagination ties in with the whole idea of the new noetic sciences. Are you all familiar with the noetic sciences, where basically it's we think our own reality? I mean, we create our own reality by our thoughts, by our mental energy.
What it is we don't necessarily, our brains are set up, the brain is set up as a autonomous connection, which is through the senses and through, and there's more than just the five senses usually in the noetic models, but you have a whole variety of these senses. You can have as many as 32 of them depending on how it's broken down. That connects us tenuously to, quote, the real world, and then we have our nervous system this brain processing system that creates reality, and that it is changeable. We could change it. And yes, this is true. The noetic sciences are sort of, in some ways, are like rediscovering magic, as
right.
is neuro-linguistic programming.
Right.
I don't know to what degree that's still popular, but it probably is.
Yeah.
Or most forms of hypnosis represent ways that we can reprogram ourselves to, change our attitudes, and like so, we have to reinforce it for long-standing, long-standing stuff. Sometimes takes a lot of reinforcement to change.
Well, I think way beyond the individual too. The whole idea of noetic science is the connectivity. I mean, call it what you will. You know, the collective unconscious, whatever you want to call it. Brains, minds, thought energy coming together from various sources actually has legitimate power. I mean, it can affect the physical world.
Is that the 100th monkey thing that you're talking about?
Well, not exactly. For instance, I'm sure everybody's pretty familiar with after 9/11. Random, like, I don't know, there were like 40, 45 random event generators around the world that all indicated very clearly a lot less randomness. I mean, it's like the consciousness of humanity as a whole was so focused on that one event and what had happened that it actually coalesced some of the random chaotic energy going on in the world. And just because everybody was not even, deliberately, but just because everybody was thinking about the same thing. So it kind of directed the energy enough that it actually produced a significantly less randomness in the results of the random event generators around the world. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about is, it's not exactly imagination, but it ties in with it, I think, because if we could learn to direct that, learn to, what was the term you used a little while ago, how to quicken your imagination and how to not only quicken it, but then do something with it once it's awake.
What was the term we used for that? Egregore. Remember the egregores?
I had a little debate going on with certain people in our group about the benefits of having an egregore, and therefore I did a little graphic called "Have you fed your egregore today?"
How do you spell that?
E G G R E. Is it egregore? Egregore.
The egregore.
Okay.
Now, I hadn't run across the term. It is used in meditations on the Tarot. I've pretty well read in this stuff, but that term was new to me. But an egregore is like a thought form, which is an old theosophical term. And the theosophical term, which is relevant to practical magic, which we're going to be dealing with in a lot of ways in this story. And we also deal with as tarot readers is the multiple body theory. If you want a semi-scientific introduction to the multiple body theory, there's a little book by Houston Smith. In which he introduces the theory of multiple bodies, and he was trying to do it for engineer scientific types. Otherwise would never entertain the multiple body. The classic theosophical view of the multiple bodies are the sevenfold sheath bodies, in which you have the physical body, the etheric body, which is your vital body, and the life body. People can see their etheric bodies as sort of a sense of glow of health. And then from the etheric body, you have the astral body, which is probably where the imagination starts growing in. And then from the imaginative body, the astral body, you Which is also where the emotions lay. And this has also been correlated with the chakras. Mm-hmm. You have the next one you would have would be lower manas and higher manas. I was started out as a theosophist, so I fall. When I'm really searching, I'll fall back on this archaic terminology. Nobody uses it anymore.
Maybe they should.
Well, yeah, it's in there. But you got to go back to the literature in the 1890s and the 1920s to see this. But as I said, Faith Javon was also a theosophist, so.
Uh-huh.
Some of the older writers, you can see that their theosophical skirts are showing in their language. But then you go into the you have various intuitive bodies and then you eventually have the spiritual body. But the point is that they're all sort of like those little grandma Russian dolls, you know.
Oh yeah.
And one inside of the other, inside of the other, inside of the other.
Yeah.
With the one being at the very core would be the physical body. It's the least of the bodies in a way. This is our anchor. And then the emotions and the etheric body is that gestalt that we're alive, which is in itself a marvelous possibility. At one moment we're alive and another moment we aren't. If you've ever seen people transition from life into death, it is an amazing process to be around.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if anybody wants to actually talk about that, but it's definitely.
I want to interject something just because it came to my mind. I was watching. I don't know if any of you have seen the movie about Temple Grandin that has. I think it's on
HBO.
She keeps saying when she sees the cow die, when she sees the horse die, where did he go? Where did it go? You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean. Yeah.
And you have to remember that she was a completely visual thinker.
Oh, absolutely.
Almost no sense of abstraction as we understood it. Because
right.
In another way, she could understand abstractions that we have no
English
right. Guess. But that's a great movie if you haven't seen it. It's a HBO movie if you have HBO.
And Claire Danes
mm-hmm.
is just magnificent in the role.
Yeah, it is. She does. That's an award-winning performance.
I agree.
But
the whole idea, transitioning from life into death, it's like, where did it go?
The character go.
I mean, it literally is. If you see someone die with their eyes open, and I have,
mm-hmm.
it literally is
yes.
like watching a light go out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the one thing you don't see when you're seeing movies of corpses
right.
and so forth.
Because of course they're not really dead. Yeah.
You don't see
mm-hmm.
those. You don't see those dead eyes.
Yeah.
Dead eyes are dead eyes, you know.
I watched a documentary on vacation. People who take a vacation to Switzerland to commit suicide.
Oh my gosh.
They allow
that's a vacation, all right. They really vacation.
Yeah. That the people they allow. The suicide tourists or something like that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, it was very. And you actually watch a person who has Lou Gehrig's disease with his wife. You know, all consenting. They allow assisted suicides. Termination of life for terminal cases. You have to go through a whole regime and everything like that, but it's good to know.
Yeah.
It's good to know, and you watch the person die.
Well, you know, there was a Star Trek episode like that.
But they didn't die.
I mean, there are people
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
I was active in the local humanist society. And a few years ago, we had somebody who had one of those debilitating diseases. But she got to a point where she knew that she was not going to have any physical autonomy left. She wasn't able. She was
inclined to a real chair already by the time she got to this. Yeah, very discreetly, saved up her pills and did a variety of things and got together with her family and she killed herself. And to protect us at the society that we were, so in our public thing, she came and she gave this talk, which was, a sayonara speech if there ever was one.
Wow.
Which I saw at the time. She planted to bump herself off. I said to somebody as an aside, and 2 days later she's dead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So I'm thinking, at least I understood where she was coming from. Mm-hmm. But the point is she didn't really tell anybody that she was going to do this because, a lot of the people that were at this humanist society were, our social workers, et cetera, et cetera. And you can actually be held liable by state regulations if you really think somebody's going to do themselves in. So we all had to realize that there was this interesting duplicity that we couldn't face this person's death in the full consciousness of knowing.
I've had some interesting. There is a. I have a neighbor up the block, and her son, with complication of AIDS, had a esophageal cancer.
Yeah.
Came down with that, and she says, "I know you know, Johanna." And I said, "Listen, I don't do this all the time. There is a ceremony called a rescue ritual."
Uh-huh.
And I did it for him, and within that night he passed on. Then I was called upon another AIDS victim, and I had to go over there and do it for them, and he passed on. So it's like there is a metaphysical way of helping a passage also. But very few people know it.
And there should be. I mean, good grief. As a society, I think we are just, the whole of Western society is just so fearful of death, you know? And it just blows my mind. I think it's just another phase. Mm-hmm. It's just another part of life. What do we fear?
Yeah, the suffering's here.
We have gotten a little better, but...
Mm-hmm.
By the time our laws catch up with in other words, where there's an incredible lag time, and we are in a reactionary phase now with this, religious bigotry stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, it's because it always gets worse before it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very true, Sherry. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of like, what's that? Take one step forward and 10 steps back.
I know.
And eventually we'll get across the railroad tracks before we get run over. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Hope and jerks. I had an eighth grade teacher who always used that phrase for everything. Hope and jerks. It's kind of life, You stop and then you get jerked forward, and then you stop and you get jerked forward. Hope and jerks. Gosh, I haven't thought about that for years. It just suddenly popped into my mind.
So, anybody else got anything they want to share about the power of the imagination, which is going to be, that is really, I mean, Promethea, we may christen her our tarot goddess, but she really is, in a lot of ways, represents this... this salvation or profound self transformation through the imagination in a deep way.
Even though it sort of happened to her without her consent, yes. It was with her consent, but I don't think
she wrote the story.
Well, that's true. That is true. Mm-hmm. You're right about that, but I don't think she quite knew what she was doing.
You're talking about her when she was Well, I think she wanted to be with her father. Her father had been killed, though she probably, as a girl, hadn't fully realized that.
Yeah.
She meets the gods, Toth, Hermes, they could take her to immateria.
Yeah.
And that eventually she could find a way where she could come back to the world. Though it would be a while, and obviously it was like a millennium or so. But at least we don't know about many earlier incarnations of Promethea.
Yeah.
But the but I do want to say that there's the Tibetans and Tibetan tantric ritual, and also in a slightly different way, Hindu tantric ritual, are very elaborate visualizations. And one of the things they do that we don't do too much in the Wiccan version of magic, or in some of the other forms of magic, of which there are a lot floating around, is they deliberately create, and they also deliberately uncreate worlds. They would create gods, and they destroy gods. And of course, what they're doing is they're building a very deep, profound sense of detachment, but not one that's alienated. It's not alienated detachment. It's just one that one realizes that this autonomous making of the imagination and of the mind, this noetic quality, is both delusive and creative in a certain sense, and understanding that the not to be caught up in it, and finding a way to realize the emptiness that it all that holds it together. You know, it's sort of like it's the underlying webbing that holds everything, that allows the weaving to take place. And as I said, they're very clear about that. And in Western magics, we're less clear about the deeper underpinnings. Though, again, in classic philosophy, which is one of my touchstones for understanding the imagination, which is Platonism, it was quite understood that the true nature of the universe was acosmic, which means acosm means that the world as it appears isn't real. No matter how much we think it's real, it's never real. It's always a construct, a noetic construct that carries in it levels of truth and levels of deception, and that's what the magician knows how to manipulate both in a way that to affect whatever change they want to affect.
Cool.
Yeah.
I say cool.
Oh.
You know, like cool.
Does anybody have a question or an issue they want to explore? I guess our topic is imagination. Shall we inquire of our oracle?
Well, I already cut the cards.
Oh, boy.
The cards are cut.
Now, okay, we do it Yod-Heh-Vau-Heh.
Okay.
Which it means reading from right to left.
Uh-huh.
So fire is the first card, and I have the Knight of Cups in fire.
And what was the first card you got?
Knight of Cups.
Oh, Knight of Cups, okay.
Next to it, place in air, water, fire, water. It's the Princess of Swords. Then we have in air, the he of the is, no, the bow, rather the bow, is oppression, Ten of Wands.
What was the second?
Which one is that? Which one of that is Wands?
That is an air.
Yeah, I know, but it's,
Ten of Wands, oppression.
Ten of Wands.
Yes. So you have reading from right to left, Knight of Cups, Princess of Swords,
Mm-hmm.
Ten of Wands.
Right.
Now the...
And isn't there one more?
Yes. The integration of everything.
Right.
The coming together of all of this, imagine, is the Hierophant. Interesting. Huh. Mm.
And that's the
area of Earth, how it manifests.
Okay.
Manifestation.
So we've got. And this is with the toss deck, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so the Knight of Cups is. Would be what you usually gloss as the King of Cups.
The King, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
no. Negative.
No.
Terry says,
no.
I'm different from everybody, so that's okay.
All right.
But it actually was the Knight of Cups that you drew, correct?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
And from the toss deck.
Okay. And then the Princess of Swords. Since I don't have the layout in front of me, what does this look like? I mean, it's three cards and then one underneath it or one above it? Or
no, it's just straight across.
Straight. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
just one side by side.
Right, I mean, yes. Okay.
Except it's following the, if you were looking at it, it's following the Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts on the left and moves right, right? Is that it?
No, yeah.
It
starts on the right,
starts on
the left.
Right,
right, and moves left. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the,
why am I not finding this card in here? I don't think I'm playing with a full deck. I think I'm playing
with a card. Well, that's, so here, what we were talking about are the magical elements. And in some ways, in one of the old systems there were of elements, there were only three elements, and the three elements that were recognized were water, air, and fire, and Earth was not considered an element. Am I right about that? Or
no.
Am I missed?
No, you're right. Well,
yeah.
Earth in a way is Earth is the tangibility factor. It's how they all react. In a way, even though I say it's four elements, it is basically the three and how they work together.
And that's actually one of the things where you have Yahe, Vahe,
mm-hmm.
where you have the He twice.
Right. And final He is feminine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's the double hey
mm-hmm.
is alluding to, or it's the same sound, is alluding to this, the 3-4 quasiness.
Exactly.
And by the way, a guy who plays around with the so-called asymmetry of the tarot in creative ways is my... latest tarot guru, Jodorowsky, in his The Way of the Tarot, which it's his own way of looking at things. He's definitely contentious, but
mm-hmm.
but it's definitely worth reading. And one of these days, I actually might want to host a class like this one with Promethea, in which we go through Jodorowsky's. Exercises on understanding the Marseille deck. That's at least in my. It depends how long I live,
Right.
I've got like so many classes. I'm gonna have to live to be about 300 years.
Well, okay, we can go for that.
I don't know if I can, but the
Oh, you just have to come back and do it again.
Yeah, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely setting myself up for another incarnation. So, let's see. Knight of Cups in fire.
That is
right.
Yeah, because
fire
and
more. Looking at this. This is based on imagination, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I mean,
that's
the first thing.
Sort of the question, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just
off the top of my head very quickly. I mean, the Knight of Cups is inviting us into battle to enter our own imagination and fight oppression and become a teacher.
I think he's offering something to us also. I mean, that cup being held up is very much an offering.
And
right, it is an invitation. It's an invitation and an offering at the same time. You know, it's come in, the water's fine if you dare. You know? So, yeah.
Now, why is there a crab there? He could have had a fish. He could have had, you know, that's interesting.
It's a crustacean. Maybe it has something to do with the shell. Maybe. I mean, I'm just talking off the top of my head.
And look, the peacock. This peacock also. There's a peacock in the lower right-hand corner.
Yes, there is.
And
is this card associated with Cancer?
Yeah, it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But then again, I mean,
there's a crab. That's a sign of Cancer. Yeah.
And it almost looks like it's glowing behind that cup.
Right.
The glow. Obviously, the crab is filled with mercury. No, I'm just thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Or phosphorus.
Well,
glowing.
Phosphorus,
yes,
right.
Well, the native is very powerfully intuitive, right?
And he's angelic. The knight has wings, or looks like he has wings.
He does,
yeah.
Well, and, I mean, maybe he's performing some sort of sacrifice to the sun god.
Okay, if we go with the spread.
Wings represent, often represent conscious access to the astral, in other words, to the realm of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional and intuition.
Now, this is in the place, the position of fire and spread. Is that correct?
Right.
Yes, and it's physical reality also.
So the action to me, fire to me is action, and it looks to me like this is a willful, absolute, I'm going to do this, agreement to move into the imaginative realm. I mean, there is nothing passive about this card.
No, nothing passive.
Here also represents that intensity and also is showing, and also the red cup.
Mm-hmm. Also being of what we call the element of water in a fire position, we're talking about a type of marriage or a type of agreement that you have to get out of your emotional way to let the imagination take over.
Yeah.
You cannot, you know, and just go for it. You know, there is an element of sacrifice, a safety zone that you have to let go of in order for imagination to work.
Well, the crab is, you know, related, some that they carried their home with them.
Mm-hmm.
So to enter into this, to accept the action of it, you have to be willing to sacrifice your comfort, your home.
Mm-hmm. And also, look at how the horse is leaping.
Yes.
Yeah. So in some ways you could say that if this is the fire night cup thing really represents, a boiling pot of tea. In other words, this is a profound alchemical transformation.
Yeah.
At a very high intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and not to put too literal a spin on it, but it did come to my mind, you know, a water card in the fire position to me indicates steam, which
definitely
is a very powerful source of energy. I mean, you know.
But it has to be contained.
Yeah.
Yes.
Otherwise, it evaporates.
A little engine that could. I think I can.
Right?
I do it again. There's also a sense of quickness, things happening quickly. You know.
Well, yeah, and fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
fire can be about your will.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is.
It may be saying that to feed the will, you need to bring in your emotional, intuitive self.
Yeah. Now, in the I know in the Golden Dawn system that the knight or the king of an element is the what? It's the it's the is it the fire?
Fire of fire.
It's the fire of fire.
But this is
the
fire.
So this is fire of the
water
of the Knight of Cups
right.
of water. So
yeah, it would be fire of
fire,
water.
Of fire and water and fire. So the element.
No
of fire,
air. Isn't.
All
the kings are yods.
Knight,
yeah.
We understand that the knight is of the element is the king. It has the
right.
place of the king, not the place of the knight.
Now, isn't it
right.
the golden
right.
the it as air?
I do, too. I see kings as air. But
that
may not be the golden dawn.
Knight in air. No, because I'm opposite of that.
Oh, you are?
Why I can't ever do
that. I understand that some of us have I perfectly recognize how this happens because I myself had to beat myself over the head a dozen times to accept the Wands of Swords attributes because I knew them intuitively opposites, you know.
What now? How do you yourself, Paul? How do you assign elements to the courts?
I'm just pretty much following the Golden Dawn.
And is the Golden Dawn with the king, whether it's the knight or the king, I mean the king of the suit, is that air or is that fire?
That's fire.
Okay, because then that's where I differ from the Golden Dawn, because I see the king as air.
Okay, so you're fire. Saying the Golden Dawn places the knight
as air.
As
the knights are air in the Golden Dawn.
That's what I... But Paul
the knights
fire.
Are air in the Golden Dawn?
Mm-hmm.
All right, all right.
Yes,
well,
that's what I'm saying.
All right.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't
okay.
agree with it, but...
They do. Remember, the Golden Dawn uses Yod, Hey, Vow, Hey. So
right.
the kings are the Yods. Kings are Yods.
Which is fire, correct?
Right. The queens are He. The first He.
Right.
The knights are Vav, V-A-V,
mm-hmm.
and that's air. And the pages are
Earth,
the second half.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So the princes are fire in the boss deck.
Princes in the top deck. The princesses are, I think, all
Earth.
They're Earth.
Yeah, the prince. The prince, though, is
no,
air.
Wait, princess.
Air. Yeah.
Oh, how is the princess Earth?
Wait. I'm getting confused here again.
I could find something right now, but
the princess
not.
Is the equivalent of the page. So
of the page, so that would be Earth, right?
Yeah, and
princesses.
They are Earth. Yes.
So the next one over in terms of this elemental spread is the Princess of Swords in water.
Right.
So that's
Earth and water.
Swords. So that's Earth as air in water.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's Earth is air and water. All right, so the take here then is how does that continue our commentary as far as what's going on?
On imagination, okay. Earth is air and water.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, just looking at the image on the card, that sword is pointed directly downward. To me, that's a drawing down of energy, you know, into physical reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, the swirls behind it make it look as though the sword has been brandished, you know, gathering energy and then pointing it directly downward. So.
And we have, what kind of bird do you think that is? A swan?
We have
a fish, a swan, and a lotus.
I do not even see a bird.
No. Where do you see a bird?
I think you are looking at the wrong card, Paul.
No, I'm looking at the cups. I'm sorry. Get the right card.
Well, she's tilting windmills.
Yes, she is, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I just like my cups. That's all there is to it. Okay.
Paul's in his cups again. Pay no attention to it.
Yes. Oh, there's a bird there, though. Yeah. It's off to the side, but now there is definitely a jaggedness going on here.
Uh-huh.
A lot of stress going on here with this.
Yeah, there's much, it's almost like potential energy in this card. It's like it's almost vibrating with energy.
Well, that speaks to the anxiety sometimes that imagination can cause.
The earthy part of
the emotional
water. Huh?
Yeah. That the imagination, it sort of verifies the first placement card in the sense that you need to contain it. There needs to be a control mechanism. How you get the control mechanism is very important, how you use it. I know Austin Spahr. Do you know anyone know about Austin Spahr? There was a whole group on chaos magic in the early 50s, 40s. One of the most frightening books ever written on magic in the present day is called Outside the Circles of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And
why, what's his name? William Gray or something?
No, not William Gray. It's the other commentator. I have a copy. It's going for $300. It's not in print anymore.
No.
I showed it to Lon Milo when he was last up at the Reader's Studio. It's a very frightening book, but it actually shows you what goes on. It's a document of how they opened up the doors of chaos. Okay, Outside the Circles of Time by Kenneth Grant.
Kenneth Grant, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
believe it or not, I actually
used
that once many years ago. I don't have a copy of it anymore.
Yeah. And here it is right in front of me. And I actually, when I was studying with Lady Sarah Cunningham Carter, I actually quoted from this book without even reading it because she told me to get the book as verification. And it just shows how they did a lot of imaginative demonology, demon work, with a lot of illustrations.
And it does help to understand demon here in the sense of elemental beings rather than infernal legions of hell.
Yes. Church has used serp demons. You know, but, I mean, it really has. The church has totally used serp demons, so, you know.
I mean,
demons and angels are pretty interchangeable, actually. Depends on your point of view, I think.
Yeah.
Right, and egregoric powers, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
It's really a fantastic document. And of how, you know, you even have to watch what you create on paper.
Yeah, you do.
You have to watch. I mean, words are things. Action.
Yeah, they are.
You know, and they become not only words, but
things,
also.
That's one of the things people learn. Like, if you sit around and maybe that should be an exercise that we do at some point, is that we all sit down with a longhand thing where we longhand our own entering into to Promethea, you know, by writing her story. Doing an act of imagination, write it down of our story of Promethea.
Kind of a flow of consciousness thing.
It's sort of that's what Stacy does.
Yeah.
Not Stacy, it's what Sophia does.
Yeah, Sophia.
I forget. I think the Stacy eventually does it, but with one of the other Prometheas helping her.
Well, now you want to hear a good one here?
Huh?
The next card. The next card is oppression. It's the Ten of Wands. In air.
Yeah, that's air in...
air, what do you call it? In the position of air.
Yeah.
Is you have oppressive creativity. The Ten of Wands. You know, creative processes are oppressive. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It is. It's like...
Well, they could be consumptive. I also would want to emphasize the issue of, you know, the elder, you know, the what we could say, like, the father versus the daughter card in the sense of elder, younger personifications in terms of the Knight of Cups and Princess of Swords.
Mm.
And the other thing about, you know, cups always trump swords. Swords, you know, the thing about swords, like swizzle sticks, you know, they'll stir up your drink, but they won't miss, but they don't
they
leave a lasting impression.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, so you know, so that the illusions of the air are quelled or stabilized through water. Of course, here we have this fire.
Fire. Air feeds fire.
It certainly does.
And then we're back to the raw element of ten. You know, which is the extreme of fire. It's, you know, it's the element. It's the elements is exhausted and about and to be renewed. Wands, So I think one of the things we're showing is that imagination is something that one really needs to respect, because it not only can it create, but it can also really undo us.
Yeah. It can absolutely bring us down, you know. It can lay us low. Right?
Well, because there in a you know, limit. We're all, you know, we're so there in a
it's a state of flux. It's feeding.
Yeah, flux. That's flux.
I mean, look what happened in the chapter today. She imagined herself run into a place with weeping gorilla absolutely taking over and making her feel like the lowest form of, you know.
Well, I thought that was a poetic justice, because that's whereas, you know, Sophia was writing her paper
Yes.
And of course Stacey, you know, just dashed off hers on the weeping gorilla.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without, you know, caring what it represented in any kind of deeper sense, and of course the deeper sense is then zapped.
Yep.
Right.
Right, and you know, Sophia was from the after it all happened, she wanted to get back to herself.
Right,
and I think that was key to why they were able to get out of the materia.
And
that's what this card can be warning of, is, you know, you have to keep reality as a place to go back to. Yeah. Oh, good.
This is here's something on the Ten of Wands that I looked up, and this is a commentary. It's a non-standard commentary by P.C. Tarantino, and it's called The Tarot for a New Aeon, and it's a tough... commentary. So for the Ten of Wands, it says, you seem to be taking on way too much responsibility for the project or situation at hand. Choosing the Ten of Wands signifies that the name of everyday duty or obligation, you've allowed yourself to lose track of your vision. When this happens, the situation becomes oppressive and you end up feeling as though you'll suffocate from a lack of freedom and spontaneity. I think this is an interesting, considering where it is in our array here, the Ten of Wands. It's sort of saying like this father-daughter incest here of the Knight of Cups and the Princess of Swords. I don't know if you want to call it that.
Yeah, the Holy Union.
It can be pretty oppressive. In the same way that we can't find ourselves overzealous sense of responsibility. Give it a rest.
Also, Ten of Wands is Saturn in Sagittarius.
Uh-huh.
Saturn being thought of as the planet that indicates your father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the planet of limitation and also the planet of karma and past lives.
So
we take into our imagination our past life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I was talking about the other night. Oh, that's interesting. Also, I talk about the process of imagination, which I have all these funny anecdotes that I collect, and this is actually an experience. I went to a person's house, and of course, a lot of people, and you know what, they want love. The women, they talk about love. I mean, I've been married 38 years, and I don't believe in love. So... you know, to me, that's an illusion.
You believe in it. You just know better.
I just know better. That's why I'm married 38 years. You know.
Yep.
Because the concept, the romantic concept of love, is not totally not real. And but other than that, that's another debate. The girl had on her altar. Guess what goddess she worshipped? People on her altar.
Venus.
No. Hecate.
Oh.
I said, if you think worshipping... No, it wasn't Hecate. It was Lilith. I said,
well, she'll get you a guy that you'll wish you never saw before. Oh, boy, she'll do some...
She'll be my
midwife.
Yeah, exactly.
I said, you got to be kidding. This is the goddess that you have on your altar to bring love in your life?
Uh-huh.
You'll have sex, but you won't have love.
Yeah.
Or emotional connection, that's for sure. And that's what she had. She had a lot of sex, but no. True.
Well, she got what she asked for.
Yeah.
Didn't know she was asking for it, you know.
How did she? Well, you know, it's sort of like, did she pick the goddess or did the goddess pick her?
There you go.
Well, she purchased the statue. I mean, it was mutual, I suppose. But Lilith? I mean, it was hilarious. I mean, oh, goodness.
So did you tell her to go out and get a Mary Magdalene doll or something?
I will tell you this. She moved Lilith off of her altar and started just putting fresh flowers.
There you go.
And she did much better.
And she did a little better?
Yeah. A little better.
Women and their bad boys.
Oh, I am too. But it just shows you, even with the gods and goddesses that you have around you, how they can manifest within the realm of your imagination. So just watch that, people. You know, what you have on your altar and what gods and goddesses you show in your atmosphere.
Wow.
So that's fascinating.
That's why the oppression, I think the oppression card speaks of this in air.
This is to be careful what you wish for, Kai.
Be careful what you wish for, but also realize that the realm of imagination goes beyond just you sitting down and thinking about something.
Right.
It's in your atmosphere. It's in everything that you look at. If you look at a lot of crosses, say for instance you have a lot of crosses, you're going to suffer. It's going to be, it's not going to be a nice atmosphere.
I have a lot of dust and dog hair. What does that mean?
Oh, please. You want to come with my cat hair?
Well, that
unending dog hair.
One of the things that's sure about this elemental spread so far before we look at the Hierophant, which I think does something to, and contain all of this other stuff, is that there's an incredible amount of activity and movement. And one of the things about the imagination, as in the same with our egotism, the reason we have a little chatterbox going endlessly in our heads, talking to us and talking about us and pretending it is us talking, is that's our ego, and it has to talk, otherwise it will not know, it doesn't know it exists,
yeah,
unless it's,
yeah,
doing something. So it's constantly doing something. And imagination is sort of like that, too. It's not as much like that. That you can be, you can leave imagination alone for a while, and it won't necessarily immediately transmorph into something else. But depending upon how you're working with it. But the, at the same time, it sort of requires an almost a tireless sense of attention, which in our case would be the Knight of Cups. And of course, the next one we have is a major arcana, that's the really reason why I think that it offers itself as a mandala in which this imagination will fit. And so then a question is the Hierophant. And it's interesting because the Hebrew letter for the Hierophant is Vav. Yah, He, Vav, He. And so here we have the Vav and the He are the same. So it's Vav, He. Vav, He is in the Vav is in the He.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting take. And of course, then there's also the.
Does that create any kind of word?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It's because va, which is the Hebrew word that looks like a nail, or a little backwards one.
Uh-huh.
That's what it looks like as a Hebrew letter. But then, anybody know what the astrological correlations are for the Hierophant?
Well,
Taurus.
Yeah.
Taurus, and is there a?
Yeah, ruled by Venus, exalted in the moon.
Hmm.
Okay. And there's our container.
Yeah.
By the way, I wrote this unintelligible blog, you can all look at.
That's spelled B-L-A-H-G, a blog,
It's called Tarot as Divination, in which and part two is a little more intelligible than part one. It's also a lot shorter, but the. But basically, I did a folk etymology of the term divination, deciding that seeing the way God sees is not necessarily the best way to understand that word divination.
Uh-huh.
So I broke it up into di, which means dual or mirroring, duality. Vine, represents basically intersecting patterns.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, like a mandala, intersecting pattern, like in the yantra, which if it was geometrical, the last part of it, nation, nativity or shun, in this case, would represents not an action of, but the being birthed as, but in a primordial sense of always in birth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always in process, huh?
Yeah, always in process. So divination, then, is actually looking into the mandala of things. And I thought, wow, this is interesting. So basically I'm saying the divination is looking into the pattern of the deep pattern of the way of the way of the world. And then I looked up, I came across through the internet references to Louise von Franz, a wonderful commentator on Jung, his secretary. All of her writings are incredibly brilliant and insightful. In some cases, she really goes past Jung in terms of insight.
Yeah.
So, she wrote a book on, she wrote a little essay or pamphlet on divination and mandalas or something like that. And what she said is that when mandalas are used for divination, they are doubled. That essentially the mandala, the image of the mandala is turned on its side and made vertical. So you have a vertical horizontal cross, which is the four worlds. And of course, when you take the double image of the things, this gives you the sense of depth, which also gives the penetrating of being able not only to see patterns that are, but to see, you can also then see patterns that are in the future and also in the past. And also as in the cross sense of the term, where you have it like it's a plus sign. You have the where you have the horizontal and the vertical. You have the four worlds are delineated, which is the Yahe Vahe that we're dealing with right now, and the wholeness of the world, both vertical and horizontal. And you have all of which is contained in what the Hierophant stands for as the fifth, as he represents the whole seeing of that. Is one of the things that's probably true about divination is though we're looking into this deep pattern of the way things are, we are always in the pattern. We're never out of the pattern. You know what I mean? There is no privileged outside. There's only inside. And so we're always more inside into this pattern.
Which is why it makes it so hard to perceive.
Yeah, on an everyday basis, and why we do things like divination and things like tarot.
I mean, there's an old saying that says, I don't know who discovered water, but I'll bet it wasn't a fish.
Yeah, right. That's a good old saying, yeah. Anybody else got anything they want to say about the Hierophant? So the Hierophant represents this, and in sort of ways, in a lot of ways, the initial cards are all sort of chaotic or can seem almost chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hierophant is saying, well, they all are, but I know that there's a higher law to which we're privy to. There's something beyond the four. And he does come in the fifth place in the Fool's Journey.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know,
this is somewhat... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go on, Terry.
I just wanted to... This is somewhat of like a final position, right? It's the manifestation of the previous three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Johanna, what are the other two positions?
The fifth position, which is the bottom of the four cards, there's another card. That's the motivation or the hidden factor that we do not consider.
Right.
It's not the obvious thing. Is
right.
Failure. The seven of discs.
Failure, the seven of discs, huh? Well, that's always nice to know.
Say what the position is again?
It's hidden motivations. It gets to the core of the situation.
We're afraid of failure? I mean, we don't think we can fail? What? I don't know.
Or failure of the imagination to function.
Oh, well, that's... Yes.
That maybe living in our world, we fail. I mean, think of it. Even with Obama, he dared to imagine.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I mean...
The problem is he stopped there. Yeah. Or somebody stopped him, one or the other. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, we bought him on his imagination. I mean,
yeah.
those who voted
yeah.
for him, he became
yeah.
our leader because
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, people projected onto him...
Projection is imagination.
Yeah, yeah. And if you look at the Seven of Discs, it does look like what part of the Tree of Life? I mean, the way they're sort of there's the 4-3 axis here, 4-3 axis of the. Tree of Life.
It's almost like the nightmare realm of imagination, that we do not go where our imagination takes us for fear of failure, for
yeah.
fear of disappointment.
Yeah. And in not going, we definitely...
Or to confront our fear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or we're motivated by to confront our fear is why we're actually traveling this at all.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's a good one, Sherry. This is what, hidden motivation, you said?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
That's in the fifth position underneath it. Understanding this in terms of our own movement, this is sort of like saying, I am not going to take Promethea is a comic book, and I'm not going to project into it anything as cosmological as whatever it could be.
In which case we shouldn't even be having these calls, right?
But in other words, there we may have this hidden resistance. And I'd be honest with you, probably hidden resistance about knowing how powerful and powerful the imagination can transform us. And we can be transformed in this imagination and how powerful it can be. I can see where it's almost healthy to have a sense of wanting to have the brakes on.
Well, this is kind of like, why can't I ever remember her name? Sophia wanting to get back to New York. She wants to get back to reality. She's like, okay, I've had enough of this.
She wants to be back like herself and her. She doesn't want to have the big boobs of
anymore.
She doesn't want to have that wonderful glamour of
she doesn't want to kick ass anymore. She just wants to be the geeky, nerdy Sophie Bangs. And
she wants more answers, though. I mean, she wants to get back to do research.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
That's, you know.
And, you know, when she very first becomes Promethea, she had to confront her own fear of her ability to write it. You know, she was saying, well, I can't write it. And she confronted that fear that, yes, she could write it. And she actually wrote it in a way that was different from the previous Prometheus and wrote her much stronger.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You see...
So she created something bigger by confronting a fear she had.
Exactly.
So Prometheus actually came from fear.
Right,
in a sense.
Right.
So, from the willingness to face the fear, anyway.
But the Shmi and stuff like that was actually being thrown at her by a bunch of people she didn't even know existed.
Right.
In fact, she still doesn't know quite who they are. Is the temple and the. And is there a sixth card in the?
Yes, there is. Oh, and you're going to guess what it is.
Above, right?
The future outcome. This is the position of where it's going to lead us. And the card
uh-huh.
is a very nice one. Love.
Uh-huh.
Well.
Yeah, the Two of Cups.
How interesting.
I just want to say I love you guys. No.
Love of the imaginal journey, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we we're going to find ourselves we're going to find ourselves smitten with our imagination.
Yeah. and flow. My God, look at the flow in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like we've unleashed the dam or, you know, broken down the dam or something.
Uh-huh.
And it's the merging of the reality and the immateria.
You know, I had a very interesting dream this morning, and it seems like it happens all the time before we do Promethea. I had the golden body dream last time, in which I was a Promethea-like character in a golden body going through a huge astral window into from one realm into another. Then I had a dream last night, very real, talking to all of these people on the other side, looking for all my dead pussycats, my dead pets.
Aww.
Trying to find them and still, bond with them on the other side. And they're happily going their way, living on a shorefront, almost like a the docks of a city, you know, where you would find ships and things like that. There's boats there and everything.
And
they're doing their thing.
And bounties for them to catch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They didn't want to be bothered being taken home, you know. They were happy campers, you know. I called out to them and they looked at me and then they walked their way and, you know, and that was it. But there were plenty of other cats that wanted to come back with me.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But a very interesting dream. And this time it was so interesting that even my husband was there with me. Usually I don't dream about being with my husband for some reason.
I don't either, Johanna. That's interesting. I very rarely dream.
Yeah, he's very rarely in my dreams in the sense of
a
function party.
Well, if you want to dream about being with your husband, get rid of them.
You know, actually,
he'll
you're
be
right.
Around all the time.
I dream about my ex-husband all the time, but not my current husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah.
Yep, you got something there, Paul. Yeah.
Yep.
So we have love and failure as opposing forces.
Uh-huh.
You know, and as a very interesting.
You know, I see this love up here, too, possibly as love of the process itself, which may help us to overcome that failure piece down there at the bottom. You know, if we, there really is no failure. To me, it's saying as long as we're working on it, we're succeeding.
Well, think of the weeping gorilla as the failure.
Yeah.
You know, we had a big failure figure in this last chapter, and it was the weeping gorilla.
Yeah.
Right.
And that failure could take you down, the thoughts of failure. The weeping gorilla was really a downer for both characters. Even Promethea couldn't fight him off.
Yeah, sucked into it, yep.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's our weeping gorilla, the Seven of Discs.
Love conquers all, right up there on the top.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that we also need to look at the Two of Cups as sort of a being bifocal intuition. This is going back to my obsessive thinking on divination. But specifically the idea of, in the first part, I used the idea of, you know, if you only have one eye open, you'll start seeing the world flat. And when you open two eyes, you see the world with depth. And depth actually is, in terms of the way we see it, is an illusion, because the way we see depth is by doubling our vision. It's by seeing twice what it is once. And this is, you know, the same thing works, by the way, for 3D, where they do 3D processing. They're making us see double over so that we'll see depth again. And also in the sense of the mandala of the primary thing, in some ways it's flat. In fact, you know, the new physics says that our universe is flat, you know, and that, you know, there's really like 11 dimensions or something, or and that the reason that all those other dimensions aren't manifest, and they don't seem to be functional. So they may be functional at some levels, but aren't functional at the level where we are, is because they've sort of folded in on themselves so that things could exist the way they exist here now, you know. And so that Two of Cups may very much, even though it's this, and that goes back to the two as but being both powerful and creative, but also duplicitous. That the issue with the imagination is always like anything in swords, it's got a two edged in both. Liberate us and enslave us, and our intuition at its highest depths can connect us to the highest of the high, or connect us to our own piddling misperceptions of things.
I have to share something. I was just sitting here listening to you speak, and I had my eyes closed, and I suddenly had this vivid picture came to my mind. Call it a vision, call it what you will, I don't know. The Princess of Swords swinging her sword around, slashing off her own head, and it landed back on her neck backwards.
Wow.
Giving her a whole different perspective on life, you know? So it's like, okay.
Right. All we need now is the Ten of Wands to be a firecracker, right?
And it's like, what in the world? Where did that come from, you know?
Wow.
It's like, I said, it was very clear. It was very clear.
Yeah, shut up, boy.
No. Wow, you know. It's,
hey, I'm really happy with our conversation today. I think we had a lot of fun with this. And we are a little over time, so I want us to wrap it up. But anybody got anything they want to say in parting?
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Thank you,
Johanna.
Yes. Thank you.
Little Red Riding Hood.
Mm. No problem.
And for giving us the spread. This is great. Yeah.
That's a nice spread.
Yeah.
You can read about it and hear about it. You can find it on my website, which is where we can download those.
Yeah, you'll get a little mini class on it.
Cool. I will try to be a little better prepared next week. I've been a little distracted the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, the only thing I recommend in some ways is if you feel like it and have the time, read the story ahead, and also look up the notes from the PDF.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Yep.
Have a good
day. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.